Good evening. It's Sunday, March 7th. I hope everyone is aware of darkness, because light and darkness seem to exist together, actually. Right? This particular podcast is the Mondo Homunculero podcast. Deep in the heart of Thanateros Production Studios, located at the Casa de Mondo Zaskia. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We cover various topics here. Tonight, the topic is grief and certain aspects of grief. Grief has a darkness about it. For those of us who don't believe in an afterlife, this darkness seems pervasive, seems inexorable. So I'm asking some of you out there if you've had a similar experience as myself. I've died twice. Came back. And let me tell you, there is no other side. My experience of it is there's nothing. There's no perception. There's no darkness. There's no light. There's no white noise. There's nothing. Absolutely nothing. So what do we do in grief? In grief, what we do is we have a range of feelings which eventually lead to more acceptance. However, there's a lot of us that just want to get to the acceptance right now and just let it all go. And the belief system has quite a bit to do with grief. It has a lot to do with grief. If you're a strong believer in an afterlife and that everything is going to be okay no matter what, and that people are going to reunite with their egos, because that's what it really is all about, in my opinion, in the afterlife, then usually there's not much grief. You know, there's some Christians that are very strong in their faith, who believe in that type of afterlife, and that's the way they believe. So death to them is only missing the other person. I think there's a valuable insight from that, which is death is a natural part of the life process. I don't think that very many of us can refute that. Death is the final for all of us. No one is going to live forever, probably. Except maybe in their dreams or in the eternity that was all the collected moments of this lifespan, which may or may not be in the continuum of information stream or consciousness. No refutation on my part there. We just simply do not know. Many try to claim they know. They don't. They're mostly all charlatans. Now, you can believe whatever you want, of course. I have no desire to change your beliefs. I can help you change your beliefs if you wish. I can. I know how to do it. I've had a lot of success at it. And I have colleagues, my teachers, that do it. In this analysis, belief is the determining tool on all of this. And there's one particular subject that I want to speak about called enshrinement. And that's when you turn a person and their memories into sort of an idol. In other words, by keeping their memorabilia around you, you keep them alive in your memory, or at least what you last remembered about them the last time you remembered them. It seems like memory actually works that way, that it changes every time you drop a subject and then remember it again. The live streaming Mark. So that's a big deal. That's a very big deal. Grief is a big deal. People experience quite a bit of it. I've experienced it many times. It was the source of most of my depression. I had a lot of grief that was unresolved. It took me 23 years to get rid of it. I didn't really get rid of it. I learned to live with it. And it's really weird because the person was my father, whom I had a love-hate relationship with. And what it resolved to is I don't hate him anymore. I remember what I love about him, or at least the last time I remembered what I love about him. And I know what he did that harmed me. And I am not so sure that he had control over that, or that was just what he knew to do. And I don't believe in forgiveness. I think that forgiveness is a ruse. It's a ruse. And that's kind of the way it goes. The belief gives you something to die for. For a lot of people, when they reach the end of life, it's due to a very serious, painful, chronic illness. And that gives them. That's right. Now you have something to die for, which is a belief. You have a belief to die for. So whether it's just the misery of a low quality of life, or whether there's people that actually believe that they've done everything they can do in their life and there's nothing more to live for, so why not end it on a high note? There's people that commit suicide, which think that way. There's people that imagine that their misery is so great that they commit suicide. At any rate, I don't believe in enshrining anyone. Why? Because I think we have enough gods. Where does that come from? Well, I remember I read a book by Buckminster Fuller, which was really a media book. It was called I Seem to Be a Verb. And in that book, he said there, at the time, there was almost 6 billion of us. He said there are 6 billion gods on the planet. That's right. Now, if we look at a lot of the what we would call primitive culture religions, or what some people would call that, when we start looking at, like, for instance, African religions, for example, a lot of those came from ancestor worship. In other words, there was Chief so-and-so. He was a very popular guy, and he died. And they made a shrine to him because he was a great leader. And then over time, people began to pray for him, to pray to him. Now, let's not do that with you-know-who. They began to do that, and so eventually these turned into gods or demigods, you know, things like that. It's pretty bad. And what happens is that people do this. They go overboard with this shit. For instance, my mother realized that she had done that with my father after he died. So much so that when she married another man, he resented it. He rejected it. He didn't like it. And so I wound up, and it was pretty bad because the bar that he was a pretty heavy drinker, and he drank heavily. And when he would drink, his personality would change. He would turn into a kind of a mean son of a bitch. Not always, but a lot of times he would. The bar where he would make his drinks was right under a large picture of my father and also a framed copy of his belt buckle that he won and all kinds of my dad's memorabilia. He was enshrined. And the enshrinement also made me feel the negative feelings and thoughts and beliefs I had about him. Overmuch. That's more of a negative aspect of it. Now, for my taste, I don't want a positive or a negative. I want positives and negatives, so to speak, because I don't think the negatives are negatives. They're just basically observations which may be tainted with emotional debris or trauma or a lot of things, resentment, anger, fear, shame. The beliefs and thinking could be tainted with those things. In the case of my father, they were. He was a violent man. He was a man who was mean to me most of the time. Rarely would he pay me a compliment. And I was really at an age where, you know, I mean, when my son came to live with me when he was 12, I found good things to compliment him about. And I found what could help him discipline himself and self-discipline himself. I found those things that were important in that regard. And it gave him a sense of self-esteem. However, not to go on and on about about his problems and the negative things which may have caused him to kill himself, I can tell you this, there was a part of him that was the epitome of self-loathing. The epitome of self-loathing. And in the end, somehow that part or the depressed part of him, which I believe those two were intimately connected, caused him to take his own life. He just didn't want to do it anymore, or maybe it was a huge cry for help. We really don't know. Now, his mother's family, they think they're psychics, and they think they know, because they think they talk to the dead, and they think they've been talking to him since he's been dead. Okay, they can think whatever they want. My view of that is it is hallucination, that they're hallucinating this. Because I know deep down in my heart that he's dead. And it fucking hurts, and I don't like it. And I wish he hadn't have killed himself. I loved him. And so what's the pain? The pain is he's not here anymore. Simple story. About an hour after I heard that he had died, when I partially recovered from the shock, some of which I'm still in, I had this overwhelming desire to call my mother. That's right, call my mother. She died in 2014, and she's not alive. She's not. There's no afterlife. She's not there. She's not happy. She's not unhappy. She's dead. This is the same with my son. The same with my aunt, who died the week before. She was 96. She was done. She was done. She wanted to go. And a lot of people, low quality of life, look for a long time, chronic illness, they want to die. And it's their right to do so. And everybody dies. And I believe there's nothing else. That's not to say that some of the energy doesn't get transferred somewhere else. I know one thing, the physical body, if it's left, if it's put in the ground, it decomposes, and other life forms take advantage of the energy that's still there. I know that. So in that sense, yes. Also, there's a sense of not real immortality, but at least longevity after death, which is genes. So, for instance, I have grandchildren. They're half my son's genes, and they're half his their mother's genes. Of my son's genes, it's probably about 25% of them come from my genes from my mother and my father. Maybe. We don't know how, what crossed over. We don't know any. We don't know their genomes. So in that sense, I have achieved the biological aim, though really the only purpose of human life, probably, which is to reproduce. So I reproduced, even though I didn't want to, and the individual that came from my semen and his mother's egg also reproduced. We were successful as organisms, at least for the next generation, possibly. Now, what has been done in his case is a lot of enshrinement. People really miss him. People really loved him. It's very tragic. What happened is very tragic, and it really did not need to happen, although it happened. And this man, this young man, he was a man. He wasn't a mature male, because mature males don't make decisions like he made. They don't do that. He was the victim of a very grave disorder, which I think primarily was depression, that led to him taking drugs addictively, so to speak, led to him making the decision to continue to use a depressant as his drug of choice, besides taking Adderall. So, in people remembering him, which I think is good for them, I guess. I think it helps them deal with the grief. It doesn't really help me. It doesn't hurt me because I remember what I last remember of him. And then when I look at the pictures, I remember from a particular photograph that he's in that I am familiar with what I remembered the last time I looked at that photograph. I don't remember that photograph, very much of it, in the moment that it was taken, even if it was taken by me. And there were many that were taken by me of him. So I don't want to enshrine him. I'm not going to put pictures of him on my wall. I'm not going to make him my wallpaper on any of my computers. I'm not going to do that. But I will look at pictures of him because I need to feel the loss. Why do I need to feel the loss? So I can deal with it. I'm never going to get over, I don't want to say never, I'm probably not too soon going to get over his loss in my life. I'm not. I'm not going to get over it. Most likely. Like I've never gotten over the loss of my mother, even though she had a wonderfully fulfilling, happy, loving life. And that wasn't her in entirety. No, she was a dirty, mean bitch sometimes. And she was a dirty, mean bitch to me sometimes. And she had some negative traits, of course. However, I appreciate the positives and the negatives about her in totality. So I don't overall have a positive or negative view of her. She was my mother. I loved her. Period. The only reason I know I loved her is because I know I'm capable of it, because I love myself. And I work very hard not to damage myself, even though I do that to some extent. I've lived 68 years despite all the shit that I've put myself through, and I'm thinking I'm going to be around for a few more years. And I could be wrong. I mean, I could die in my sleep tonight. I could get killed in an auto accident. You know, there's all kinds of things that could happen to me to end my life, but I'm going to tell you this. Suicide is not one of them. Any more than a drug overdose is one of them. Any more to getting in an accident is one of them. I love my life. That's why I'm still alive. I came to a point in life where my will to live was greater than my will to die. And that saved my ass. It wasn't a god. It wasn't people in a 12-step program. It was the will to live. It caused me to make a decision or a series of decisions to do whatever I had to do to stop using drugs, of which alcohol was probably always tied for one or two in that list of preferred substances. I wanted to be free of all that. And I found a way to get free of it, so I thought, and I was right, it did work. There were a lot of negative aspects to it, which eventually caused me to leave. One of which is some fanatical, one-way thinking that doesn't allow for other aspects. And I'm getting to be where I don't really believe it. You know, addiction is really as serious as people make it, except when they make it that way. Because I had addictive behavior. And it caused me a lot of pathology, caused me emotional, physical pain. And I wanted to get out of it, and I wanted to stop. And I found a way to do that, and I stopped. And I stayed stopped for 30 years. However, I found that it wasn't necessary for me, nor desirable for me, to think of myself as having a disease which is incurable, fatal, and progressive. I didn't set out to prove it wrong, but I proved it wrong in my own experience. And I think that's the way everyone should deal with that. If they think they've had a problem with addiction, okay, get help, become abstinent for a while, long enough to know, to take control of what you think you may have lost control over? Make decisions that are life-affirming. Now, there's programs that you can do that in. I was listening to Stanton Peel the other day, and he has this program called LPP. I've known about it for a long time, but I had forgotten about it. There's also Smart Recovery. I say, okay, you can go to 12-step program if you want to. I mean, people are going to do what they want. However, most people go take a look and say, nah, that's not for me. Most people who beat their addiction, and I mean, you can overcome, you can beat your addiction, and you can find a new way to live without a religious cult. And that's what these 12-step programs are. Now, there are valuable things which you can learn, take with you, and also you could even be there, not buy into the fanaticism, not buy into the cult mentality. You can do that. I did that. However, it became so undesirable that I left. Now, the other part of that is that most people can learn moderation. They don't have to stay completely abstinent one day at a time for the rest of their lives. They don't. No. Most people actually can practice moderation. I practice moderation, and it works. Like, I had two drinks last night, right? And I smoked weed. And today, I was thinking, well, I might want to have a drink. But then I thought, no, you know what? I don't want to have a drink today. I'm not going to drink today. So I didn't drink today. I didn't smoke a bunch of weed today. Well, I don't smoke a bunch of weed anyway. I just use it very sparingly that way. Tonight I did drink an edible concoction, which was 25 milligrams of THC and 75 milligrams of CBD. The THC CBD concentration is off. However, what I have is pretty much a pain-free feeling, very pain-free. So this is a good ratio. I have found, though, 15 to 1 THC to CBD is better, works better, or 1 to 1 works better. Anyway, that was a waste of money. I'm not going to buy that brand anymore. It's okay. I like what it's doing. However, I like a little bit more bang for the buck, so to speak. So those of you out there, if you listen to this and you were a friend of my son or you're one of the other family members, you don't like what I'm saying, that's okay. I'm not asking you to like it. I'm not even asking you to listen. You might listen for 5 seconds and turn me off, and that's fine with me. I do not care, because the people that matter don't mind. And they'll listen as much as they want or as little as they want, and they'll still care about me. And that's important. And they can still love the memory of my son, because you don't, and I don't, we don't get to love him anymore. He's dead. And if you don't want to accept that, if you want to think you're talking to him in some other non-existent realm, so be it. Do it. I'm not going to believe you. I'm not going to, because I've hallucinated stuff like that too. I hallucinated some very poignant stuff before. None of it was actually true, other than being a concocted perception in my imagination. And I accept it as that. And, you know, in my late adolescent years, I grew up, which, now, my late adolescence lasted until I was about 40. My late adolescent years, I learned that hallucinations were normal for me, because I'd done a lot of LSD, and that just to live with them and let them happen, and wow, you know, they've always been enjoyable. And I hallucinate, I wouldn't say all the time, but I hallucinate usually every day or every few days. And I know it's a hallucination, and I don't get scared by it, and I don't freak out, and I don't want to jump off a building, or I don't want to go kill people or myself or hurt anything. In fact, I feel less like hurting anything than I ever have, and it's a great feeling of peace. So those of you who want to enshrine my son, who I think that's defiling him to do so, because if you only look at the positive stuff and you only share the positive stuff, you could be going down the path of denial. Denial of your grief feelings. Denial of the humble reality of him and his life. And I remember that what I remember about him is what I remember of what I remembered the last time I remembered about him. That's right. None of the memories are perfect. So I'm not telling you not to remember. I am suggesting strongly you don't enshrine him, nor anyone else who's dead. I had a very dear friend for many years. He was my sponsor in the program for 23 years. I loved him like a brother, and he me. At least he said so. So I take him on his word. Before he died, he had liver cancer. It killed him. Before he died, and he told me this as well, he did not want to be enshrined. He did not want to have a funeral or a memorial or a wake. He just wanted to live in the hearts of those who loved him. And he still does, but he's been enshrined by so many of them that every time I see one of his so-called friends, and most of the people were not close friends of his, almost every time it's just somebody who's getting an ego boost out of doing it. Okay, that's okay. What I do is when I see that on social media, I hide the page. I hide the post. I don't want to see it. I don't need to see it. That's bullshit. That's not what this man wanted. Even his wife didn't. And I called her on it in a very nice way, as nice as I can be when it comes to outrage that I feel. She got pissed, but she did take down his page. I'm glad. Because it was an enshrinement, and he didn't want that. Unfortunately, he was not in a good enough mind to take that page down when he was dying. I learned that enshrining my father was a very bad idea because he wasn't, overall, a nice, kind, loving man. That was part of his nature. I learned the same thing about my mother. The same thing about my son. Doesn't mean I don't love them. I love them very much. I accept them very much without judging them and their behavior. Now, if their behavior negatively impacted me, I pushed back. And I pushed back on all three. My father wasn't very good getting the pushback. My mother got okay with it. My son listened. And it was always about something he had done in conjunction with me. And so he always admitted it. However, admitting doesn't solve the problem. He knew what the solutions were to these problems. There weren't a lot of them, but there were some. And basically, I had to practice the boundary of physical distance with him quite a bit because of his behavior. That didn't mean I didn't love him. It didn't mean that when I did see him, I wasn't overjoyed. I was overjoyed to see him. I loved seeing him. My last memory of him is when he was here the last time, which was over New Year's. I think he and his girl spent 5 or 6 days here with me in my house. We had a good time, drank too much. I mean, we went through 6 1.75 liters of Cazadores tequila. He drank probably 75% of it because I don't really like to get drunk. I can have some drinks and have a good time. Just don't like to get drunk because I don't like to stumble around. You know, I don't like to, you know, wake up in the morning still half drunk. So I don't do that. But he was drunk. He wasn't sleeping well. He was on Adderall again. And let me tell you, alcohol and amphetamine are not a good combination. They'll kill you. At least suicide on the installment plan, anyway. So, I'm not going to go into all the negatives. You know, I'm not even going to go into this anymore. No need to do that. So, I'm just here to tell you that don't enshrine people. Remember them in a humble way, accept their assets and their liabilities as people. And then I think when we accept that, we can really love them. We can really love them without judging them, because we know a big part of them. We don't know all of anybody because we're not in their minds. However, we know a lot. And that's what kind of ticked me off about these people, these relatives of his. Oh, he was so wonderful. And blah, 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 blah. Yeah, he was. And he was a liar. And he cheated. And you know, he had faults like that. And I accept that about him. I wished he wasn't that way. He was. That's who he was. And I love him anyway. I love him. You know, that's just it. It's just not, I don't have the energy to get into a resentment and an anger trip about him in that area. I can just accept him for what I knew about him, positive and negative. So no enshrinement, please, everybody. You know, I'm glad that part of his family, there's some people over there that I'm never going to agree with, and some of them don't have anything to do with me because they're judging me based on their immaturity. And part of the maturity of everything is like, this is what happened. This is how this person died. And this is how it makes me feel. And that's it. But I guess there's some people that think that that's definitely not correct. That's not, you know, ethically correct. In fact, his mother wanted me to take down the post that I made, which about 400 people responded to. They came out of the woodwork. And none of their pages got that kind of response. Why? Because I told what happened. I'm not blowing my horn. I'm just saying there's an effective way to do things. And if you're not ashamed of somebody for their behavior, because I didn't take my son's behavior personally. I didn't take his behavior personally. I got over that with him, and I was doing that at one time because of some of the problems that I mentioned in general. And I really wanted to be angry with him and hate him for taking his own life. I did. However, I'm just not able to buy into that all the way. My emotions buy into it for a little bit, and I let them roll, and they go away. And there's part of me that will probably from time to time get angry. And there's part of me that's going to be sad most of the time, because I am about that, because I am about most people who have died. Why? I miss them. I want to be with them in the now, not who they, what I remember, what I think I remember, what they were or how they were. Because I miss them and I want to be in the now with them. It's just like that first couple of hours after I found out about my son, I had that strong compulsion to call my mother. I wanted to call my mother. Now, I have sisters that have kind of filled in that it's different because they're my sisters. They're not my mother. So this part of me misses my mother. I miss her. And I miss being able to talk to her. Just like my friend Tim, who's dead, who is an outrageous fucking human being. politically, he and I could not have been further apart. Ethically, we were pretty far apart. But he was just fun to be with, you just had to be on your guard that he couldn't get the best of you at anything, because he would try to do that because he had that low self-esteem based malignant narcissism problem. And he, you know, he made decisions that caused him to die. That's what I believe. I don't blame him for it. Maybe he would have got the type of illness he had that did kill him anyway, regardless of what his behavior had been. I have a cousin that happened to. He was he was a hell of a guy. He was a great guy. He was a good person. And he was brilliant. Judgmental. He was brilliant. And he died of the same illness that my friend him did. He died of pancreatic cancer. That kind of broke my heart so much that I wouldn't get on the airplane and travel up there to his funeral because I didn't want to limp in and limp out. One. Two. I just, you know, funerals, I don't really like them. For instance, I did this memorial in part for myself, which I thought it would be therapeutic for me, and it was to a certain extent, but also for my son's mother, because I care about her. I love her. She's a friend of mine. I was there to support her and then some of the rest of his family, I guess. I was at least attempting to do that. They have to obviously have a view of me, which is bullshit, and I don't care. You know, I don't even know if they even have that. They might not even have a view of me like that. So I'm not going to worry about them because they neither add nor take away from my life. At any rate, I hope they play it smart and don't enshrine him. I hope they do that. Because they could get into some really goofy shit over this. I don't think they will, but they might. That's their business. I'm not going to fuck with them, so it's not going to be mine. And I'm not going to take personally what they're doing, because that was what they think, what they feel, and what they believe. And that's not my responsibility. Nor do I really care all that much. I don't need to. So I'm going to end up with one song that I like in particular about death. If I can get it back on here. YouTube seems to have an awful way of canceling itself out and fucking things up. So let's see if this comes through. This is by one of my favorite bands. I think it's a lot about death. Machine Head, and it's called Now I Lay Thee Down. We'll be right back. That's all, folks. You have a great Sunday night. Please be kind to yourself. And remember, your memories are memories of memories. So this is peace out from Casa de Mondo Zasquia, Mondo Homunculero, from the heart of Thanateros Production Studios. Thank you for tuning into the Mondo Homunculero podcast, recorded at Thanateros Production Studios at Casa de Mondo Zasquia in Phoenix, Arizona. This podcast is uploaded to Anchor, which then distributes to many other platforms like SoundCloud and iTunes, Stitcher, many, many other platforms the podcast is distributed to. And I'm here to plug Anchor because it's free and it's a darn good application that you could use on your phone, you can use on your computer, whether it's Mac or PC, you can use it on a tablet. You can edit it fully, you can add and create many different aspects of your podcast. It's an audio hallucination. No, it's an audio presentation application, and it works great. And it's free. So that's it. Anchor.fm or in your Play Store on your Android or in your iPhone store. I forget what they call that. Anyway, that's where you can find it. Get it. Listen. Have a good time. Make your own podcast and share it with us.